Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity. I'm your host, Bradford Chancellor. On this episode, we're back in London recording at our studios in Waterloo. And we're going to be delving in to one of the world's most innovative culinary minds. I'm thrilled to welcome to the show an extraordinary talent, Chef Raphael Cagli. With two Michelin stars to his name, Raphael is renowned for his unique approach of blending Brazilian and Italian cuisines for an immersive experience with absolute artistry. His restaurant in London, Dateria, is celebrated not for its unique cuisine, but also its complete dining experience and intricately crafted. We're going to be exploring Raphael's journey from his Brazilian roots, establishing himself as one of the top chefs in the UK, and uncovering what it takes to get two Michelin stars. We're going to be talking about his passion and his creativity, and how he's embraced cultural change from coming from Brazil and here into London in the UK. Raphael, welcome to the show and thank you so much for being here today. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been quite cold, to be honest.
I wasn't expecting
snowing this morning, but it's been good. Just get up, take the dog for a walk, get some fresh air. So yeah, it's been okay so far, yeah.
Great, fantastic. As tradition in this series, the guest of the last episode asked the question to the guest of the next episode. And the last episode, we were in Dubai at Gulf Host, and we had a food service consultant called Ryan Gazer on. And he asked the question to you, what was kind of like your biggest challenges and rewards in your culinary journey so far?
Right. So I would say not long ago, probably coming out of from COVID and lockdown, I think I had to reopen the restaurant. And I think that was... You know, I look back and think that was how the hell I managed to do that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, along with so many colleagues from the industry. But, you know, we just opened in 2019 and then we had to close down at the times like everybody else. But there was a times that we could open and we were... just being awarded the second Michelin star.
Right, okay.
So, and then we coming back and then we just like, hell, this is intense, right? Because we faced so many challenges at the times, you know, wearing masks and things like that. So
yeah.
The team coming back, how are they, you know? But I had to open the restaurant when I could open.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that was probably the trickiest part of it, you know, trying to reopen an establishment that was closed for a good few months.
And yeah.
And then trying to take it back from where we left, but at the same time, you know, being awarded the second star as well. So we felt there was a lot of pressure.
How long have you been open before COVID kind of hit?
So literally just under a year.
Oh, right,
so,
okay.
Yeah,
and then
so,
straight in, wow.
Yeah, straight in. So, and yeah.
Yeah, very, very difficult.
So that was, yeah.
Challenging.
That was challenging, I remember. But we overcome, so it was...
Just to kind of kick us off, can you give us a bit of an introduction about your sort of journey to the UK and then... opening the restaurant in 2019.
Yeah, how long have we got? I tried to be quick on this one.
Okay,
but
no
yeah,
problem.
We're talking about like, 23 years.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. We're condensing into
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, so when I first came to UK, I was mainly to London. I wasn't planning to stay this long. So I was intended to stay 1 year. And
okay.
My plan was to, so I quit university. I was studying back home. I was going to the second year of economics and then I felt absolutely a waste of my time. So I needed some bit of change. And I think coming to London, it was a massive encourage of that change. And, you know, come over here with nothing. And as I was saying, I had plans to stay 1 year, study English mainly to, you know, improve. And then I had to work as well. As a student, you have to work. You have no, you know, didn't have my parents pay me
no
for
income,
everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was coming over here. So find a job in the kitchen. So nearby, I was studying around Fulham area. Yeah. So I was living in that as well, like a Putney Bridge, the area. So I found a local restaurant nearby and I was doing, you know, I was working in there a bit of full-time studying as well. So that was the first thing that started taking me to this career. So I started really liking that the vibes in the kitchen, the kind of like, you know, every day there's something new, there's some sort of situation that you haven't faced before.
Right.
So until that happened, so those are 3 years. The chef at the time has encouraged me to go to Westminster College, which helped a little bit as well.
So that was really your start into the culinary world.
Yes, really the beginning. I before coming here, I had no plans and no intentions of, you know, be a chef or have a 2 Michelin-star restaurants, you know. It was kind of like a happened by accident in a ways, but like I felt that probably something inside me was already there, just waiting to be burst, you know. So, because I do have a family which comes from, you know, this world. Let's say my dad had a soft drinks factory. My mom had a restaurant as well. So I kind of grew up in this food and beverage environment, but I guess they never made me feel part of it. So I never, you know, put myself into it.
Right.
And then, you know, through the times I was in here, I wanted to, you know, be with the best as I could and working in great restaurants. And I moved to Italy, where my family heritage. So I wanted to explore a little bit more of the side. And after 4 years in there, I moved to Spain as well. And living in that for 2 years, I came back to UK. So I went to work for Heston.
Yeah.
And again, there was another open, you know, section in there for my life, another chapter beginning from there. And that's it. So they're basically just working in the, you know, I could go deeper on this, but so that was my path as
to come to the UK,
and then, you know, I'm still here after 23 years. So
yeah, it's quite amazing.
I don't think I'm going to go anywhere.
It's
to be
an
honest,
amazing story, really. I mean, yeah, I didn't know that. So I mean, achieving 2 Michelin stars, it's no easy task. I don't think people realize how difficult it is. I mean, how do you reach that level? And was that what you set out to do, or did it? You know what. What's behind that?
Yeah, well, I guess it's not something that you plan, to be honest, right? It's like, I guess you're working in different places that your journey, your path as well were made of, like Michelin restaurants and, you know, at that high level. It's not something that you think they would have it one day, but it's on the back of your head. Like, you know, I've always been trained in restaurants at that level. So you kind of automatic think like, oh, you know, they'll be great to have one day. Just, it feels like everything's just happening so quick as well that you don't have much time to absorb and to think about like, right. is it good? Is it bad? I don't know. Yeah. Right. Of course it's always for good. Yeah. I mean, we just, it's things like happened, and of course everything, there's a sequence of everything you do in life, right? There is, everything comes out after. So if you plant a little seed in there, I feel like, you know, the tree just continues growing. If you look after in between, make sure you water, you know, this kind of things, right? Yeah, it does. You know, it's not just the fact that he's a 2 Michelin star, but it's the fact that, you know, is any other acclimates really. But it's just always it's good, you know, for yourself and see where you are at. But yeah,
it's okay. I mean, so your restaurant. I mean, I sampled some of your food at the event up at Northcote.
Okay.
18 months ago, I think it was, years ago.
Yes, yeah.
But your restaurant is definitely on my bucket list.
Yeah.
And it's fair to say look at the menus, your Brazilian, Italian heritage that comes through. How does that influence your cuisine? I mean, what drives that?
I think nowadays I've always kind of tried since having opened the Terra. I think it's having the kind of like a surprise menu is like trying to announce the experience of the guest other than just, you know, sit down like a normal a la carte and just choose what you want to eat. You know, I just find that, yes, it's good, but other places are doing that. And we've always kind of, you know, been places that always do it that way. So you wanted to do something a little bit different. So I guess it started like not showing the menu. So it's like, you know, you come in here to experience what I want to provide.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of like a trust the chef, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So,
leap of faith.
Sometimes don't trust the chef, but yeah, but like generally speaking, it's like, yeah, just trust what we want to provide you, trying to embrace this experience. And the influences that I have is like something like, you know, I've always keen to take me back to my roots a little bit, right? And it's something that I've learning as well throughout the way. Having the Terra is like, you know, we always look back at things like, you know, where I'm from, you know, like I think also Brazil as well has such a vast culture. It's like I always say it's a melting pot of cultures, right?
Yeah.
We have, you know, in São Paulo has the largest community of Japanese, you know. So,
oh, okay.
So we're trying to get these, you know, influences a little bit. There's a Portuguese, there's Italian, French, Spanish. So I think there is a bit of everything, which helps, you know, find it easier when it comes down to put together in a menu form, you know, in a food form. There are no limitations of what we can do. I also don't like to stamp my restaurant as A, Brazilian, B, Italian, C, this, right? So I find it like because it's part of my culture, it's part of my journey as a chef. So living in those countries before, it helped me to developing this on me as well, you know?
Right, okay. So it's a broader spectrum of cuisine,
really.
Correct,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I understand that you've had a refurbishment at the restaurant, I think a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about what drove that? What have you done, really, I suppose?
Yeah, so so this is something that has been in the back of my mind for a while now. So since I took the space like nearly 6 years ago, I've always wanted to do more than I've done in there.
Mm-hmm.
So the planning of refurbishing the whole kitchen has always been kind of there. there's been a lot of talks with Matt from Electrolux Professional. And we've been back and forth with a few, you know, few ideas, you know, and then how could you possibly do that? And then our kitchen is our open kitchen.
Okay.
So it's the whole restaurant, basically. Yeah, it's a big part of what we do.
Right. So all the guests are sort of in the whole thing.
Yes,
really.
You feel like I was at home, right?
Yeah.
So because it's literally tables facing facing the kitchen. So I say I need to do a whole thing pretty much. And
okay.
It was nice to do the layout that I felt that it works for our food, basically.
How many
covers
are you doing at the restaurant?
It's 11 tables.
Right. Okay.
And we do up to 28 covers.
They're quite intimate.
It's a very intimate. We have a lot of all the staff, either chef is in front of house.
Yeah.
They're all involved in the service. I like them to interact a lot, so there's a lot of interaction. So that's why I felt that be more open. So like the kitchen, it helps also that for the chefs come out, so you don't have the barriers of you are front of house, I'm back of house, right? So it's like I'm a chef, I don't talk to the guests, you know, the kind of, you know, old school mentality. So so we've done the kitchen. We closed down for 4 weeks over September. Mid-September, October. And it was a great opportunity to kind of reset everything a little bit as well. To rethink about a lot of things. Because we not only done the kitchen, but we took over the bar next door to the restaurant, which we turned into like a lounge area.
Right.
So the guests started the journey in that, I say this. So we started the snacks in there, some glass of champagne or something. And then they come to the restaurant. So it kind of have two rooms in there. So we had to learn this movement as well, right? So it's everything new for us. So not only the kitchen, but there's a lot. And we've done a bit of touch-ups as well in the restaurant itself.
Do the guests come at different times, or they all come at different
They come at different times. If they respect the time, you know, sometimes they can, you know, they come half an hour earlier, half an hour later. So, you never know. But we tend to stick to those times. And then, because it's also for us, you know, it's not nice when you have people showing up in totally different times, you know. So we're trying to now having the bar as well helps a lot there, control more the guests, the
and
time
staging
they come
it through
exactly.
And that sort of thing. So just going back to the refurbishment, what equipment have you had put in there?
Well, so we've got everything new. So, but I think obviously the main show for us was to put a big Molteni stove.
Oh, very nice.
It's incredible, you know, piece of equipment there. So just, you know, I think also designed there and bespoke for us. There was also something quite nice, right? So you have things now that you are able to cook, or even your creativity, you can always let it go and fantasy about how things you want to cook, how you want to finish it off, and there is no limitations.
Yeah.
So
we expand the menu. Have you had customers come in that were there, have come before the refurbishment?
Anyway? Oh, yeah, we already had, yeah.
And what's been the feedback?
This definitely has been the wow.
Oh, is it?
And I think that's what I wanted to give as well, you know. Yeah. I think like sometimes the guests that never been before, they won't see that difference. But I mean, come on, it's in there in your face. So we like the older guests to come in and see the difference. They because they've been many times, so they see.
Yeah.
And then I think that's the nice thing about it. Like, so to hear from the guests, see, wow, that's amazing. This is much better. It looks a lot cleaner. It looks sharper, you know. So, yeah, it's good to hear that, yeah.
Probably chefs love it as well. They probably feel like they're on a new level now.
Oh, yeah, massive. for our chefs, they definitely, you know, well, I would like to think that they appreciate that, you know. And then it just gives them the opportunity to be cooking in with the best, you know. So, I think we can also produce a better food as well.
Fantastic. Well, I'm sure. Two Michelin stars, where do you go with that? But sustainability, I mean, it's, you know, it's a big word and everyone's talking about sustainability in the culinary world. How do you incorporate sustainability in your practice? I mean, and how important is it really in the business?
Of course, we try to achieve it there as much as we can. Sometimes it's just harder, but we look back everything that we've done and we continue doing. In terms of, I think the focus is mainly the produce. It is respect to the produce and trying to utilize everything. When it comes down to create a new dish or, you know, bring the element to the menu, it's always good for us to look and say, okay, what are we going to do with this and how much waste is going to generate, but also what can you do with that wasted? And I think this is kind of like our job as well to look into it. Sometimes, things can look a lot pretty, but if you see the waste that generates, it's a concern, right?
Yeah.
So we have to think about that too. We're lucky enough to have another small restaurant on the first floor of the hotel.
Okay.
So it's more casual.
Yeah.
And that helps us to utilize it. Everything.
Yeah, so share produce.
Exactly. So anything that the Terra might not use it, at least we'll use 100%. So it's 100%, nothing goes to waste it. So on the aspect of food, you know. And then everything else, obviously, we're trying to look as well, things that we can do and can help the business.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, your story is quite inspiring, how you became a chef and how... What would you say to young chefs today coming into industry? Any, you know, hints or tips, or if they had aspirations to be a Michelin star, what would be your advice to them?
I kind of say like your goals shouldn't be chasing accolades. You know,
okay.
I think yes, of course they will come in the right time. I've always saying regardless your dreams are. Of course, you naturally have the desire to achieve them, right? As part of your human nature, you wanted to feel that you're achieving some goals and then you kind of having acclimates in the future, you know. But I always saying, try learn as much as you can, work hard. I think that's essential. And you can take it from my experience, you know, I've always worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I've achieved so far is something to be proud of, you know.
Definitely.
Even coming from, you know, a totally different country and different background, and just to think that I came as a student with one suitcase, right? And then, you know, and I think that it's crazy to look back. But don't worry too much about money. and status. Mm-hmm. Again, this will come with the time. And I always say the right things will come with the right time, you know, trying to listen to the ones who has more experience and trying to learn from that as well. And you can fly as high as you want, basically.
Yeah, that's a great advice. And yeah, thank you for that. So, I mean, something that I ask all my chef guests, you're hosting a dinner party for three people. They can be famous people. They don't have to be famous people. They'd be whoever you like, dead or alive. who might you invite? And then what menu would you give to them? And also maybe why?
Well, it's only three. I can.
Oh, you can do more if you want. I mean,
but you have a function. You know,
spit it out if you want to.
Imagine
change
how
it.
Beautiful it'd be. Like all the ones coming back, and the ones are here, or the ones nearly going. So imagine all together in a room.
Yeah.
That is definitely a dream. I would stick. I would put it Ayrton Senna.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's nothing to do with cooking, mm-hmm. but the guy is being an idol, you know, a sports race. And I think as a person, what he's done, and it's a legend. And I think, you know, he's always inspired me. And I look back at the races that he, you know, he used to do and he used to race. And then Senna for sure will be on the table.
Okay.
Another one, I would say Anthony Bourdain.
Right,
Anthony
okay.
Bourdain. You know, we all know him, right? If you are at a certain age, you know, not say the youngest one, probably don't. But I think as a writer, and then, you know, just take me back when I started cooking and I was reading Kitchen Confidence, you know, and then I just found that, wow, it's, you're going through that stage. Mm-hmm. So I think I belong to that. To that kind of phase as well, and okay. respect what he's achieved as well. It's a shame that he gone the way he gone, but
yeah.
And probably, I think on the table, I'd like to have all the chefs that I've worked with mm-hmm. in the past. I can name all that: Stefano Baiocco, Kike Da Costa, Martin Brassategui, Heston Blumenthal, Simon Rogan. So I think they were the one. Part of my journey,
yeah,
and I would respectfully love to have them. They actually haven't been to my restaurant. Some of them, they will, and then I've got idea of try to cook with them maybe next year. So do a four hands collaboration.
Yeah,
now that I've got an amazing kitchen,
yeah, that'd be fun.
And then so I would like to have them, and they're all in a table, and I think just to showcase. What my restaurant is about, mm-hmm. what my food is about, and the influences they had on me, and what that means, and what we're doing, and then I would do exactly what we're doing now, the menu that we do at the Terra. So
okay, well that sounds fantastic. Yeah, you've expanded it. I mean, it could go anywhere with the numbers.
Yeah, you can have 20 covers, you know, and we're just three is not enough.
Okay. Well, Raphael, thank you for that. That actually completes this part of the podcast. It's been great listening to you and your story, and I didn't know about how you came to UK. It's quite inspirational.
Electrolux Professional is one of the leading global providers of food service, beverage, and laundry for professional users. Their innovative products and worldwide service network make their customers' work life easier, more profitable, and truly sustainable each and every day. Serving a wide range of customers globally, from restaurants and hotels to healthcare, educational, and other service facilities, Electrolux can always be relied upon for their innovative and valuable solutions. For more information, visit electroluxprofessional.com.
Now, my next guest is the partner and sales consultant manager for Electrolux Professional. He has a wealth of experience in food service equipment and has been with Electrolux just under 12 years. He's a highly respected, influential figure in our sector and has made himself a name as being a dynamic, forward-thinking food service equipment professional. It's a pleasure to welcome Alex Reed to the show. How are you today?
Super. Thanks. Yeah, thanks very much for having us. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to Waterloo. Now, something maybe lighthearted to start us off. Can you tell us something, a fun fact or something people might not know about you?
I suppose it depends how recently people have seen me, but I've certainly got less hair than what I had when I started in the industry, but I don't think that's a reflection on the industry itself, to be fair. So, yeah.
Okay, in terms of your career today and your role in Electrolux, can you tell me a little about what you do and then, yeah, a bit overview about Electrolux?
Yeah, so my role is predominantly supporting our field-based sales team that are out there working with a network of distribution partners, but also trying to get some engagement from end customers to drive the demand. I'm also responsible for some of the consultant relationships that we have to ensure that we're getting products specified. So as someone said to me during my first day in the business, we could be talking to somebody in a Michelin star restaurant in the morning. You could potentially be in prison in the afternoon. And then your third visit of the day could be, you know, a care home or a school. So it's really varied.
Quite varied, yeah, customer base as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you look after the whole UK? Or?
So the UK and Ireland, yes. Right, so okay. We've got field-based sales team dotted throughout the UK, and then also John, who's based in the Republic of Ireland for us.
Okay, it's quite a big area of responsibility.
Absolutely, and very diverse kind of in its geography, but also, you know, in its customer type, in that, you know, we're doing more and more business through our distribution partners in London, but actually most of the distributors that are kind of selling into central London aren't based there, just, I guess, because of demographics and where their businesses are based. So, no 2 days are the same, that's fair to say.
Okay, what kind of makes Electrolux Professional different from other manufacturers and you know, maybe some of your unique selling points?
Yeah, so we are the true one solution provider. So I think we're the only manufacturer under a single brand that can offer full solutions within cooking, warewashing, refrigeration, preparation equipment, a beverage offering now through acquisition, and then a separate part of the business from a laundry perspective. So that means that alongside some of our distribution partners, we're completing full kitchen projects.
Right.
But also we've got customers and distribution partners that perhaps picking or choosing products within there. So this month, in fact, we've had full kitchen projects being invoiced and delivered where we've done absolutely everything under one brand.
Dishwashing the lot.
Absolutely, the whole thing. And then we've had other opportunities, one of them which really tickled me, which was a dairy-free cheese manufacturer who, through one of our distributors, came up to our showrooms in Luton, had some demonstrations on the equipment, and actually pivoted in terms of some of their operations. So, you know, a really specialist topic there. And then a full kitchen solution being invoiced, you know, a couple of hundred miles up the road. So very diverse in what we do. But I think our unique selling point is that we do have that full portfolio under a single brand.
So I guess from a customer's perspective, if they've got a full kitchen and then, you know, inevitably service or preventive care or even warranty, it's just one, I guess, one call.
Yeah, I mean, in years gone by, people would talk about a one-stop shop solution.
Yeah.
We very much go off of the one as a brand now, but it does mean that you get consistency, single point of contact, certainly single point of contact for the end customer, but also we find single point of contact for our distribution partners at times because they're able to pick up the phone or an email with pretty much any inquiry they might have and speak to one of our regional business managers and get support from there.
Okay. Quite unique, I think.
Absolutely.
In this market. So, I mean, can you give us like an overview of some of the products within Electrolux Professional, I guess, for the, you know, from the top end to the mid-market, whatever it is, I don't know.
Yeah, and so Rafu was on earlier, so he's just had a Multini suite installed.
Okay.
And then Multini have been producing custom-made suites by hand in what would be a small foundry in France for over 100 years. And they're really bespoke and can be anything that
Beautiful, what he's got.
It's stunning. And actually, we're just, through one of our other distribution partners, installing what we believe to be the longest Multini suite ever manufactured. And that's going into central London kind of as we speak.
Oh, seriously?
So that's, you know, at its kind of
Can you say where that's going or not? You're not allowed to
not
say.
Yet. Okay. Not yet.
Okay, damn.
So that's kind of the most bespoke. And then we've got a range of, which we call Thermaline, which is made in Switzerland, which is high productivity, but also can be the modular or bespoke. So we're seeing that where perhaps a chef or an operator doesn't want a completely bespoke suite. So want some modularity because there may be changes in food trends, or even we find actually the chef isn't buying it, the hotel or the restaurant might be buying it. They may go with what the chef wants today, but actually in 3-6 months' time or 3 years' time, the chef may change, food trends may change. So having the modularity there to remove a piece of equipment and replace it with something that's maybe more on trend or more on vogue at the time gives the flexibility within that. Then there's a full range of refrigeration, so from cabinets and counters. Of course, everyone's always striving for the most energy efficient and the most sort of sustainable within there. So we're kind of up there in the race, whether we're number one today and someone's number two tomorrow, but we're always trying to produce sustainable products that are there for the market. Again, full range of dishwashing, so be that from the new range of under-counter glass washers that we've introduced this year, right the way through to your larger rack machines that perhaps a hospital might install or a university. So we really have got that depth and breadth within it. And then to support that, we've got some specialists within the business because, of course, you can't necessarily have a full offering without having some level of specialism in there. So we have to balance the two things quite carefully.
I mean, quite a beast, really, Electrolux Professional. Do you have like different factories for different pieces? Obviously, the Maltini is done in France, I think, and then...
Yeah, so the vast majority is produced in northern Italy. Mm-hmm. So modular cooking, in generally speaking, dishwashing, refrigeration, all produced in northern Italy and all within our own factories. And then I guess easy to say that we've then got some more specialist factories. So the Maltini factory, for instance, is in the same place that it's been from its inception. You've got some members of staff there that are second, third, fourth generation family staff that have been there because it really is a kind of traditional hand-built foundry, so to speak. Another factory in Switzerland, as I alluded to, which again is a bit more around kind of precision manufacturing because, you know, the Swiss have very much have that reputation for precision, accuracy, and we see that with some of the suites that are coming out of there or some of the modular equipment that's coming out of there. And then as a group, so Electrolux Professional Group, we've just done the acquisition of Aventis as a company, so Aventis Induction.
Okay.
And then, but that will still run as a standalone business within there. But clearly what we've acquired there is the technology and the intellectual property we see that induction technology within the market is something that's being more and more requested and needs to be our kind of quickest area of development there.
Yeah. Okay. So are there any projects that you've worked on that you're particularly proud of and that you can share with us as well?
Yeah, a couple of examples and quite diverse in kind of how they've come about, but also their how they're utilised. So we've recently, with one of our supply partners, been working on Braithwaite Hall up in the northeast. So Tommy Banks is actually one of the chef consultants for the whole estate there.
Right.
And that's a total Electrolux Professional project.
Wow.
So the distribution partner has kind of put their faith in us as a brand and as a manufacturer and gone forward with a full kitchen solution there with Tommy and his new venture. So really exciting there to kind of have that one solution.
Definitely.
In a site that, you know, is stunning in its both location and application. I think that they'll do really well there. And then, as I alluded to earlier, some of the more interesting and diverse things of, you know, when we get a phone call saying, I'm doing dairy-free cheese, I want to produce more of it and call it, have you got something that can help us with it? I think the initial answer from our salesperson was, I don't know, but come in and try and we'll see if we can make it work. And they then installed a really, really big boiling kettle and a really, really big blast chiller. So they've been able to increase their capacity. And I think they're selling into the likes of kind of Selfridges and Harrods and places like that now with a dairy-free cheese. So it's something that we would have never thought that, you know, we would get involved in.
Yeah.
Completely different from the Wraithwaite project, but equally as fun and as interesting.
And as important, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm.
So sustainability, I mean, it's a big word, and I know you alluded to it in your previous sort of statement, if you like. But how important is it to Electrolux professional, and what steps are you taking to get there, if you like?
It's really important, and it's part of everything that we do and that we strive for and talk about day in, day out. I think from a global company perspective, we've got some really challenging and ambitious near-term targets. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, we want a 50% reduction in our CO2, scope 1 and 2 emissions by 2025. And then if you look at scope 1 and scope 2 emissions in our industrial sites, we want a 70% reduction on those by 2030. It looks like we're very much on track to almost achieve those, and in some cases achieve them really, really early. So that there are key drivers around being, you know, sustainable in everything that we do. And we're seeing more and more of a push from that, from actually the customers, certainly within the national account and the chain sectors. You know, it's really hot topic at the moment around sustainability.
Are you seeing more kind of electric sales, like you said, like induction, that kind of thing, more than gas? Or is it, I know infrastructure's a problem, but...
Yeah, absolutely. Infrastructure remains a challenge in there. But I think also what we're seeing now is that more and more young chefs are being trained on induction. So actually they're more and more receptive to having electric within their kitchens, certainly better working environments within there. So whilst you've potentially got sustainability upside to it, you've also got things like better working environments, speed and we all know that there's challenges around staffing. So actually, if you can streamline some of the processes within there, it's all helping. I mean, I look back and think of, you know, the days of trying to temper chocolate on a traditional gas French top, and now to be able to do that on an induction stove, you know, is much, much simpler. So these things are always evolving.
Of course. So final question, really. Is there any innovations coming down the line that you can share with us? I know that obviously some of it's top secret.
There aren't specific products that I can allude to. Mm. But I guess with things like the acquisition of a specialist induction company in Aventis, our drive to be producing more sustainable, more customer-focused products within there, and certainly within using induction technology, I think that will be something that comes through. But within the product roadmap, there will be continued innovation in kind of everything that we do within there. So be it innovation in terms of combination ovens, and that might not necessarily mean a new oven, but for instance, the software that we have within the oven is continually being updated around cooking programs, things that are really making the chef's life easier and in some cases more profitable, because the chef can't necessarily always be there all day, every day to do some of those things. So we're trying to streamline some of the processes and make it easier for them.
Okay. Well, Alex, thank you for giving us your time, give us insight into Electrolux Professional. We're going to go on to the third section of the show where we're going to be discussing menus and product innovation. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thanks for your time, Rad.
Great, thank you. Now, Raphael rejoins us, and I'm joined by Matthew Asprey, and we're going to talk about menus and product innovation, an interesting topic. We're going to cover lots of ground in the hospitality sector. Now, Matthew's a business development manager for Electrolux Professional. He's got a demonstrated history of working within the hospitality industry. Matthew, welcome to the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role within Electrolux Professional?
So I've worked for Electrolux Professional now for 7 years. Started out mainly just area sales manager looking after our partner accounts, And that's kind of now transitioned into a lot of end user focused stuff as well. So still managing a network of partner accounts across our portfolio of products, but also focusing on speaking to chefs and hotel owners and people in the education sector to get them to buy into Electrolux Professional as a brand.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here anyway. So Raphael, how does equipment influence what's possible on the menu? Because obviously in the last segment you talked about the new kitchen and you said everything's possible.
Yeah. Well, I think everything, to be fair, I think having equipment in there that allow you to just your imagination doesn't get limitations or by what you have in front of you. So I think the equipment is a big part of what we do. And I think it just helps you developing, you know, and strengthen your imagination to further. But yeah, we just like to have the best to so allow us to be the best, you know, so be as good as you can be.
Definitely. Matthew, I mean, how does your team support chefs like Raphael and other chefs sort of achieve those culinary innovations?
There's not many chefs like Raphael, in fairness. He's very particular. but I think when you get to kind of Raph's level of skill, the caliber of chef that you're dealing with is absolutely on it with any minute detail. So how do we support them? I would say it's first and foremost is understanding what they want to get out of the equipment that they're looking to bring into their kitchen, understanding the challenges they face on a day-to-day basis. Also, you know, showing them your products in different scenarios. So taking them to sites where we might have a particular piece of kit that a chef is already using to speak to the chefs who have got it in the field, who are testing it, that, you know, we are always going to give our biased opinion on how good the kit is. But, you know, I often will, and I did this with Raph actually before he bought his Maltini stove, is we went on a little whistle stop tour around London to look at different stoves and our Thermaline brand and Maltini brand. We ended up settling on the Maltini for that one, but we're quite lucky that we've got a really good development kitchen in Luton as well, and also in Pordenone, which is slightly more exotic, where we've got a real amazing facility with all the different types of equipment that we do, where we can bring chefs in and it can be their kitchen for the day or however long they want it. So they can bring in their own ingredients, their own pans, and test our equipment in their own time and space.
Fantastic. It must be good, but it's helpful for chefs, isn't it, to test and trial products and things?
Yeah, it's great from both perspectives, really, because it's good to see equipment in the field, you know, in a in an environment where the chefs, you know, as much as we've got great relationships with our customers, they will always give you an honest answer, but also to give the time and space for chefs to come in and kick the tires, so to speak, on the kit is really important as well, because it's all well and good seeing it, but then also testing it, cooking on it, putting their produce on it, gives them a much more rounded idea of how it's going to perform for them when they get it into their restaurant, and ultimately make sure it's right for them.
Definitely. Okay. Raphael, just thinking about menus and menu development and innovation, what are the biggest challenges that as a chef at your level you're facing with menu development and things?
Probably developing a menu or a dish itself. I think the menu, it's like, especially our menu is already set. So I don't change the format of the menu because it's for me, it's like a winner format.
Okay.
And then you have dishes in there. There's always a story tailored to tell, right? We, you know, when you come up with a dish or an idea, like, you know, mainly you look, when I look back a little bit of history, or, you know, if it makes sense, that story to tell, or, you know, if there is a connection with something somehow, it's not an easy creation, let's say. It's not an easy path. There's some of the times that the ideas doesn't correspond to what we want to do, or you can have a, you know, you can dream about something, but when you started to put in practice, and then it really just doesn't click. I think, you know, having having a good kitchen, like that you just say, I want to barbecue this piece of meat, right? So if you don't have a good area or a good extractor fan that you can barbecue a meat, it will limitate you to how you wanted to finish that kind of dish.
Yeah.
So those little things have the kind of limitations of how you wanted to put together things.
Yeah, so the equipment is kind of...
Exactly.
If you've not got full range of equipment, it's limiting your menu and how you then finish or...
That's the reasons we decided to do this refurbish and invest in these, because I knew that it was what we had before, it wasn't bad, but it's like we needed to renovate to be better and then to come up with like better ideas or better dishes, you know? So... And I think that's why you kind of involve it throughout the times as well.
Yeah. Not standing still, always looking forward and moving forward, really.
Yeah, exactly. It's what's next, you know, and yeah.
Matthew, what innovations have you seen in food service equipment that enhance a chef's ability to experiment and innovate in the kitchen?
I think for me, anything that gives a chef more time in the kitchen, I think is... What Raf may disagree or agree with me here, but I think any technology that comes out that affords a chef more time to be able to develop menus, think about new ideas, or even go and, you know, try different food in different restaurants to get inspiration or see what everyone else is doing is important. So, you know, I'm thinking different kind of things that would come to mind are things like, you know, you stage cooking in your combi ovens. Yeah. I go in so many kitchens and you see that someone has an expensive combi oven and they just run it at 180 degrees, mixed heat, don't really do anything else with it. Whereas you can save time by putting in the correct programs. You know, if you've got an oven there that can store 1,000 programs, why not use it in order to create consistency? Mm. I'm going to give a bit of a shameless plug here to our product range. We've got our Skyline Chill-S blast chillers, which for me is obviously biased opinion, but the ability to do what they can do is really incredible. They go from minus 41 to plus 40.
Okay.
So speaking from experience with Electrolux Professional, when we have our demos in our kitchen in Luton or in Pordenone or wherever around the world, if it's a morning demo and we get our guests in, we want to bake them fresh pastries.
Yeah.
We buy our croissants and our pain au chocolat unproven, frozen, and our chefs will put the croissants, pain au chocolat in the blast chiller on a freezer mode. And whilst the chefs are sleeping or developing menus or whatever it is they're doing, the croissants can be in the chiller on a frozen mode, and overnight it can kick into a thaw mode, which then kicks into a proving mode. So the chefs can get in 15 minutes before our guests arrive, and the croissants are gone from being minus 41 to proven, ready to bake.
Right.
And, you know, if they were doing that, you know, from a manual perspective, they would either be proving them for a lot longer before they came in, spending a lot of time thawing them or making them fresh. So even in that scenario,
cutting down time,
the amount of hours that is saved just by just that one process is incredible, really, when you think about
many, many more things it can do as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's just one example. So, yeah, I think anything that saves time. Induction's another big one for me. The downtime that you would have normally with cleaning, you know, gas equipment, taking the grates off, scrubbing them down rather than spraying and wiping. You know, it's not really a new innovation, but it's something amazing that can save a lot of time and give the chefs, you know, more freedom to be doing things that are more exciting than cleaning, for example.
Yeah, true. Raphael, is there any specific piece of equipment maybe you've had installed that's really kind of transformed the operation for you?
Well, there is one that I've used in the past, but I'm not sure if Electrolux Professional can match this one, but I'll give them a go. So we speak to the developers in here and trying to create. I've used a Rotovap before.
Okay.
So it's basically it's a boiling point in a lower pressure atmosphere, let's say. So you can reduce it, sauces or a juice, for instance, with keeping the same color. And it's quite scientific a little bit, but I've used it previously, and you really want to, you know, it's definitely on a bucket list to this one. But yeah,
what would that be used for? What sort?
So it's a rotavap. It helps like a boiling in a lower pressure, basically. Okay. So just basically like just
enhancing flavors, or
yeah, it just enhances the flavors but reduce it down basically.
Okay.
And then you can have like a super, let's say if you just do like a carrot juice,
yeah.
Right? So you just boiling that at a lower pressure, and then it just helps, you know, reducing and keeping the color as well. So it's quite vibrant and intense as well. So yeah, this is one of the equipments that I've used in the past, and it's definitely like it's a distiller basically. You can distill some
highly
alcohol.
Highly specialist.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So there's something for Electrolux to think about that.
Matthew, just thinking about the bespoke cooking suites, I mean, how do you start that process with a chef, kind of coming up with a concept and then a design, and what's the journey there?
The journey gives you a few grey hairs along the way, but super, super rewarding.
Especially if we did it with me, right?
No, you were one of the easy ones. In
all right, cool. Good.
yeah, we were only on revision M when we got to deliver Rafa's stove. How does it start? Your only limitations with a piece of bespoke kit are the size of the room it's going in, the demands on power, and budget, I suppose, and then anything else, certainly within the realms of Thermaline or Maltini, you're kind of limitless, really, with the appliances that you can put in there. If there are certain other third-party appliances, maybe you want to put a Rabatta grill or a barbecue in there, you can do that as well. So you really, really start with a blank canvas. So it's just, again, it's speaking to the chef, understanding what they want to do, what their ultimate end goal is, the appliances that they would like within the stove. And that's just not just in the top of the stove, but also in the body of the stove as well, because you could have refrigeration, freezer drawers, ambient space. Raf in his stove has got some hot holding drawers, which have got individual temperatures as well. So rather than just having one temperature across the whole cavity, he's got individual temperatures on each drawer, which is really cool. And with Rafa's induction as well, we altered the parameters of the induction, so it will take Raf's very small 9-centimeter pans as well. So, yeah, it's not an easy process. There's hours and hours of work that go into it.
Yeah.
And there's always a lot of back and forth in. I think it's a mixture of asking the right questions about what the chef wants in there, and having a look at what other people have done as well, taking inspiration from other stoves that have already been built. And then, you know, the really fun bit is deciding on the perfect color.
Okay.
I think as well, because you worked as a background as well, a bit of in the kitchen, right? As a chef. So I think it's important as well. Like, you've done that stage, you understand it, you know, what goes behind the chef's mind, or mainly, you know, be there hands on to understand it, what required to, you know, to have the best kitchen, let's say. So you got to be part of that a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
I think
it's
just, if you're just trying to be like a normal salesman and trying to sell me, like, you know, something, it's not going to work because, you know, I kind of gather that you have no idea what you're talking about, right? But obviously we've met, it was like, you know, instant heat. And then, yeah, it was great to be partnering with this project. Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a fair point. I think it's having a passion for doing what you're doing as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's so rewarding to be involved in projects like this where, you know, I went for dinner actually with my wife over a year ago to Doterra when me and Raf started talking. So it was our 5-year wedding anniversary. So we went and I went and watched the service and kind of understood how, you know, because we were speaking for almost 2 years before we delivered the stove.
Right. Okay.
It's
too old.
So yeah, it's having a passion for what you're doing as well, and you know, being part of that journey and being excited about it, I think is really important, because, you know, like with chefs, you've got to love what you do. Otherwise, you know, it comes across in the food. If, you know, if the chef hasn't got love for what they've cooked, and I think it's the same in this industry, if you don't put your heart and your soul into what you're creating, then the end result is not going to be as good as if you are excited about it.
Definitely. So what is the colour of your cook suite? Because I'm one known now because you're...
What's the colour? So, what's the code in there?
Do you want the scientific answer?
The scientific code, yes.
The Viral code is 6012.
Which is...
I'm going to use this number.
It's called black green.
It's a green, so... but it's kind of like a... How do you describe it there? Like a dark green colour?
Okay,
the official colour is called black green.
Okay.
So in some lights, it looks almost like a British racing green. Mm. In some lights, it looks quite pastely. I was showing Fabio some pictures earlier. He said, oh, it's blue because it's the way the light
hits it. It changes how the light hits it.
It's really cool because it's the only one in the world in that colour and trim combination that Maltini have ever made as well.
Oh, wow. Seriously.
So it is a true... It's a true one-off piece.
Yeah, absolutely bespoke.
And the really cool thing is if you go to Datera for lunch and then if you can afford to then go for dinner, it will look different in the daylight and in the nighttime light.
I like it there. Come for lunch and dinner.
Exactly. Got to have a big wallet.
Just to see the colour change. But yeah, I think the colour is... It's something that when Matt presented me those colors and I was like, okay, you got to pick one. And then I panic.
I
felt that it's something I have to make a decision on something that will be stick to the rest of my life or at least the rest of the stove life. And, you know, it's hard to imagine how that is going to look like in a real situation. And trying to match it with the rest of the room as well. You know, the kitchen is so open, so there's a lot of colors to try to bring it together. But I wanted something a little bit like nobody had before. So, you know, it's just something that, you know, represents a little bit myself. The green, it was one of my favorite colors, and is also one of my team back home is green as well, football team. So I kind of pick it that way. So
it was one of the questions you asked me though was, does anyone else have this color?
Yeah,
and so I had to go back to the factory and say, have we ever made one in that color trim combination? And we hadn't. So as soon as I said, yeah, no one else in the world has got this, he was like, right,
that's
I'm
it.
Having it.
Truly unique item. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Rafa, you work closely with Matthew on this project, and you know, how do you give manufacturers feedback? I mean, you know, do you give them feedback? Because I guess it's quite important for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it's, you know, they've always asked and they always go back and forth. You know, I think as Matt was saying before, the precision of things that I personally like and what I am, so kind of push them to also innovate and go a little bit further to what they normally deliver, let's say. You know, we give the feedback, and I think before and after there is, you know, there is a minor feedback, but like it's everything's been put together, and that's why allow the time that we had to create something quite special. Yeah, I guess I hope they take the feedback positive, and I think, well, you know, for them is like improving for the next customers, but also for the expertise as well.
I mean, Matt, that kind of leads on to the question, how important is the feedback?
Yeah, I think it was mentioned earlier on, you don't want to stand still, and I think it was when we were talking about Raf's restaurant, you want to keep evolving, and you know, if you stand still, then the competition will catch up with you. So it's important to take on the feedback from the chefs that you work with in a range of sectors, because everyone's got different needs and understandings on certain things. So something we'll always take on board. If you know, everything obviously is field tested from a manufacturer's perspective. But there are certain things where, you know, you'll speak to a chef a few months down the line, oh, I wish it had this. And, you know, we'll always try and feedback back then to the R&D teams, and hopefully something perfect will come along one day.
I guess the sky's the limit, because you could just keep going, couldn't you? But
exactly, yeah.
So, Matthew, just thinking about like longevity equipment, reliability, how do you ensure that, Electrolux professional?
I think with any kitchen purchase where it's an important piece of kit that's going to be intrinsic to what you're doing every day as a restaurant, I think you have to treat it as a luxury item. There are a lot of kitchens that don't have, you know, the nice things like combi ovens and decent dishwashers and bespoke stoves. So with any luxury bit of kit, you want to make sure it's looked after and maintained properly. So we have an area of the business called Essentia, which looks after the aftercare of any product for people that want to take that option as well. So regular PPM mm-hmm. visits. So this equipment can be maintained and looked after, but also extended warranties are available at point of purchase and even after purchase as well. Mm-hmm. And then we also, for some customers that have got critical equipment, we can have spares kept on site. So we did one just a week ago, actually, with a rack-type dishwasher for quite a well-known chef who's got a full Electrolux professional kitchen, but it's the only dishwasher they have in the building. So they want to make sure that if there ever does develop a fault, that it's a first-time fix where possible. So we've created a list of what spares we think they should keep on site. So if anything does go down in future, hopefully when the engineer turns up, he'll have the spare to then put into it and get them back into action again. So, yeah, it's a mix of looking after it, cleaning it properly, getting it maintained, and then, you know, if you can, having any critical spares on site there for any future issues.
Definitely. I think the advantage, I guess, with Electrolux Professional, if you've got a full kitchen, like you said, that chef, it's one point of contact, one relationship, one.
Yeah, it's
a bit easy to manage,
it's not me.
It's not
me yet.
It's not yet.
90% there.
We're slowly taking over Raf's kitchen.
I'm trying.
I think as Fabio said, you know, we are the one. Is a bit of a tagline in that we can kit out a full kitchen as much as possible. So across horizontal cooking, dishwashing, combi ovens, blast chillers, preparation equipment. So from a support perspective for the chefs, especially where I mentioned I'm doing a lot of direct engagement, if that chef needs any support or needs a return training visits or whatever it is they're after, they're not scrambling around thinking, oh, who made this, or, you know, where did I get that from?
Yeah.
They know to get, you know, in contact with me or whoever looks after the department that they're trying to get hold of, and they're seen to a lot more quickly as well.
So Matthew, as you might know, in the Nutritionist series, the guests in this episode ask the guests of the next episode the first question. And later on this week, I'm at the FEA conference interviewing the new incoming chairperson. What question have you got lined up for her?
Well, our question between myself and Raf is from a manufacturer's perspective and from a hospitality chef perspective, how do we get younger people into the industry and excited about the industry?
Okay. I'll pose that to her on Thursday to see what she says. Well, thank you, everyone, for being on the show. Thank you, Raphael.
Thank you very much.
Matthew, hope you both enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've given us lots to think about. And thanks so much for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, this concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity, and the next episode we're going to be in the Midlands as Kitchen Curiosity goes live for the first time and recording at the FEA Food Service Equipment Association conference, and I sit down with the incoming chair as well as the current chair and a few of the members of the association. As ever, I'd like to extend a big thank you for tuning in. It's been an incredible journey so far. If you've got any questions for our future guests or a specific subject you'd like me to cover, please drop me a line at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. Ensure you subscribe to the podcast. Please rate the podcast if you've got a moment on Apple or Spotify. It's much appreciated. And don't miss out on the next episode coming out on the 6th of December. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.